Succession number 19935, Reel 1.
And
this was up to when I was 18 years old, when I joined the army. Then I
Jim Wilkes, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Shipley.
Which year was this?
1924.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Shipley?
Yes, most of the time, yes.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
So that would have been in 38?
Correct.
Did you get a job?
Yes.
Doing what?
Errand boy, a chemist.
Is that what you were doing when war was declared?
No, no. Then I was working in the dyeing and finishing.
Finishing?
Dyeing and finishing. The wool trade, textile trade.
And?
This was up to when I was 18 years old, when I joined the army, see.
Had you joined TA before the war?
No.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I certainly did. I have a recording of it there.
And how did you feel about it?
Well, if I remember rightly, it was on a Sunday. And I would only be... I'd only be 15 or 16 then, and I really didn't feel a right lot about it at that age, to be honest. You know? But the following day, when I was at work, all the girls, they were all crying, like, you know. But I didn't sink in, I don't think, with me at that age.
How old were the girls who were crying?
Oh, different age, young, middle age, old.
How had the men at work reacted to it?
Well, most of them was... calling up age, so they weren't very pleased, I don't think. They realised that eventually they'd have to go into the services.
Did the war affect you at first?
The only way it affected me was my brother was one of the first to be called up, the first lot of militia, in June 1939. He worked at the same place as me, actually. And he was one of the first lot to be called up. So obviously my mother was upset, and that didn't help, you know. But my dad, he was a peacetime soldier before the war, before the 14 war, and he just took it in his stride, you see. Didn't affect my dad much, you know. And then later on my sister joined up. And then the day I was 18, I went and joined up. So we were all in the army.
You mean you joined on your 18th birthday?
Yes, the day I was 18, I took the day off work and went and enlisted.
Had Shipley been bombed by then?
Well, not Shipley, Bradford. Bradford had, which is only, as you know, 3 miles away. Yes.
So... You hadn't been in any bombing before you joined up?
No.
Can you tell me about how you went to join up, please?
Well, as I say, I took the day off work, got my birth certificate, went to the mechanics in Bradford, had my medical that day, got my railway warrant the same day, and my King's shilling. All in the same day. And that was August the 20th. And I went home with the King's shilling and my railway warrant to report to Chester on October the 15th, which was would be approximately 6 weeks after the day I joined up.
What happened to you at Chester?
Pardon?
What happened to you at Chester?
Well, we joined what was then called the GSC, which I believe stood for General Service Corps. And you were there for 6 weeks, basic training. You couldn't go out of barracks. And then after your 6 weeks, you were sent to your respective regiments which you wanted to join. In my case, the West Yorks. So from Chester, me and some others were sent to the Young Soldiers Battalion, 70th Battalion West Yorks, which at that time was down in Kent, at a little village called Shorn. And we were there quite a while, and eventually we got...
What were you doing there?
Well, there was all infantry training, of course. West Yorks, it was an infantry battalion. General infantry training, bayonet practice, rifles, Bren gun, mortar, you name it. Everything that was associated with the infantry, really.
How did you take to the training at Shorn?
Oh, I liked it. I was all right. I liked the army. I was okay. And I met some good friends, Down at Shorn, there's quite a few lads from Leeds, Bradford, and all around this area, so we all had something in common,
How did they all get on with each other?
In the main, okay. One or two arguments and fights, in the main, everybody got on okay, yes.
How did the NCOs treat the recruits?
Oh, well, we was okay. Our sergeant was called Sergeant Lum, a very nice fella, and the Lance Corporal of the platoon was the Lance Corporal Killock. And the first time he got us on parade, he said, "My name is Lance Corporal Killock." Killock, spelt with a capital K. So I presume he was emphasising it was Killock and not something else. So, but he was a nice lad.
Something beginning with P, possibly.
Yes.
Any incidents that happened to you whilst you were in Kent?
Well, in Kent, I managed to get 14 days in the glasshouse. I told an NCO what to do, and of course, I finished up in the guard room on the close arrest and got 14 days in the glasshouse, which was in Colchester. It was in Colchester. And I got 14 days in there. But what surprised me there was I was only in for 2 weeks. The valley was at 5:30, everything on the double. And the chap in the next bed, well, we didn't have beds, we slept on the floor, on those square biscuits. And the chap, when I walked in, he growled at me, he said, "Look, I'm going to look after you, kid, you're only a lab." He said, "Otherwise, you'll go out of here with half your kit missing." And he did. So, after being there a few days, I said to him, "How long are you here for?" He said, "2 years." I said, "God, how are you going to stand 2 years of this?" He said, "Well, look at it this way, Jim." He said, "You'll be going out of here in another few days," he says. "And you'll be going back to your unit, and eventually you'll go abroad, and eventually you'll be in action, and you might get killed." He said, "When my 2 years is up," he said, "the first thing I'm going to do is hit one of them bloody sergeants." I said, "Well, you'll get another 2 years." He said, "That's right." He said, "But I won't be getting shot at, will I?"
Why was it so rough in the glasshouse?
In the morning at Rivalli, 5:30, you was handed your razor. You couldn't keep your razor in case you handed your razor, shaving cold water. And at breakfast time, you only had two mess tins, and you might have bacon and egg and porridge and tea. But snag was, you had only two mess tins. So you either had your porridge in with your breakfast and tea in your other mess tin, or you missed out on one. And it was the same at dinner time. Two mess tins. You got your meat, potato, veg in there. But if you had a sweet, that in the other messing, you've nothing to put your tea in. So you put your sweet in with your dinner. So you could have a messing full of... It all went down. But it was the roughest 2 week I had in England. But I asked for it.
What did you think of the food that you were provided with?
The food was good. Plenty of it. In the morning, it was porridge with salt. But you've got a pan full, you know. You certainly didn't go hungry. But there's plenty of it, yeah. No problem there.
What did you have to do all day?
Well, after breakfast, you went out, and it was the most massive barrack square I've ever seen in my life. And bear in mind, there was Army, Navy, Air Force, all mixed up together. And everything you did on that barrack square was at the double. And all the NCOs were sergeants, but you had to call them staff. And they were all peacetime people that weren't fit to go into action. And so they got this job in the glasshouse, you see. And some of them weren't bad, but some of them were, you know, so-so. I've got the window for them. But fortunately, I only did it 2 weeks.
Were there many people in the glass house?
Oh, I've never... There must have been thousands. I have never seen a barrack square as big in my life. It was massive. There must have been thousands of us.
And do you think all the others in the glass house, apart from this chap who taught you, had done it to avoid being killed in action?
Oh, no. No, he was just a one-off. There may have been more with the same idea, but most of them, it was some silly offence they'd done, sworn at an officer or even hit an officer. No, I don't think so for a minute.
And you had to sleep on the floor?
Well, we had what in them days what they called square biscuits, three biscuits to a bed, like, which were sort of filled with coconut matting, I think. And... we had to scrub the floor around each bed. You may not believe this, but with a toothbrush. And and when we came back into the barrack room, after we'd been outside on the barrack square running up and down, what the staff did, they'd get a big tin, what had been full of fruit, potatoes or whatever, kick it all the way around the barrack square, then give it to us, and we had to polish it till you could shave in it. Each in his turn had to polish this damn big tin that they kicked all over.
What did you polish it with?
Oh, they gave you some, not jura glit, brasso, like that, and a duster. Yeah.
How did the guards behave towards you?
Oh, there was okay, but if you looked at one, it was more or less dumb insolence. They could put you on a charge just for looking at them, you know. The discipline was, well, very strict. You daren't look at them, you know what I mean. But there was no ill treatment or anything like that. Nothing like that.
Were they allowed to touch you?
Pardon?
Were they allowed to touch you?
Oh, no.
What happened if you were put on a charge then?
Well, you got your... if you were only doing Tim and me 2 weeks and I did something silly there, I'd probably get another 2 months on top of what I already had. Simple as that. Yeah.
Did it do you any good being in a glass house?
Not a lot, because I kept getting put on CB. I was only 18... and I was, I suppose, silly or stupid, whichever way you look at it. I just wouldn't knuckle under to the discipline. If I thought anything, I said it. And consequently, like, you know, I get put on a charge more often than not, like, you know.
What had you said to the NCO in the first place to be sent to the glass house?
Well, in plain English, to get stuffed.
Why did you say that to him?
He wanted me, well, he ordered me to find a scrubbing brush and scrub some boards that went in, laid down in a tent. We had some bell tents, I believe they called them bell tents, and the flooring of them was 4 quarters, if I remember rightly. And he ordered me to scrub one of these. But I couldn't find a scrubbing brush. So to be honest, I was using a stirrup pump. And he came up and said, "That's no good, Wilkes. I told you to scrub it." And that's when I said, "Oh, go get stuffed."
But you said that you liked the army, and yet you said you wouldn't knuckle under to the discipline.
I did like the army. I don't know why. But that's why you're silly. Silly. Young and silly.
What happened to you after Kent?
After Kent, me, Jack Hammond, Roy Jens, about half a dozen, we got sent down to Holt in Norfolk to be trained as Bren gun carrier drivers.
How did you cope with that?
Oh, I like that. I kept out of trouble there.
Why?
I liked driving the Bren gun carrier, and with a good set of lads together, and the sergeants were okay, sergeant instructors, yes. I was all right there.
Is this 1943?
It would be, yeah. Yes, it will be 43, because I joined up 42, October 15, 42. Yeah, it will be 43.
Anything that happened to you at Holt?
At where?
Holt. Anything happened to you there?
Well, the only thing, silly thing I did there was we were stationed in a big hotel, and at the back of this hotel there was a swimming pool. Now, to go to the swimming pool, you've got to go down the stairs and round the back to the swimming pool. Well, the room me and Jack Hammond was in, it was about a 6 foot drop onto the side of the swimming pool. So silly me, being lazy, decided to jump out of the window, drop out of the window, to save going round. But unfortunately, the side of the swimming pool was wet. My ankle cockled up under me, and I finished up my badly wrenched ankle, like, so that didn't help a right lot. I nearly got put on a charge for that, but I didn't. It would have been a self-inflicted wound.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, from there we just did our training, and had some embarkation leave. Went back and eventually got the train to up in Scotland. We went for the troop ship. Would it be Fort William? Can't remember now. But anyway, went all the way up to Scotland for the troop ship, which was the Orion. I remember the name of that. Orion, a big liner in peacetime.
Which battalion was this?
Well, then we were going out to, well, we didn't know where we were going, actually. We assumed we were going out to India. We weren't in a battalion then. We were a draft, what they call a draft. And we eventually landed at, we went through the Mediterranean and got dive bombed there, but fortunately we didn't get sunk. And landed at the Mediterranean end of the Suez Canal. We all had to get off the troop ship there, because seemingly the canal was blocked, or the boat was too big to go through it. And then we went by train from that end to the other end of the canal, to Port Chufik. And we're in a massive transit camp there for 2 or 3 weeks. And eventually We thought we were staying there, but eventually we got on another tube ship. I can't remember the name of that one. And finished up in Bombay.
Can you tell me any details about the dive bombing of the Orion phase?
Well, we were going through the med, as I say, and of course, I believe at that time the Germans had occupied Crete. And anything that went through the med was getting hit. And we were going through in convoy, of course, and we were all below deck. And at the bottom of each stairs was an officer with his revolver drawn. I don't know what he thought he was going to do if everybody had panicked, but that was the idea. The officer was there at the bottom of each stairs, so nobody could panic and dash up. And as I say, fortunately, our ship, this bomb landed just down the side of it, shook the boat over, but I don't think it did much damage, actually. And we got away with that. But I understand one of the other boats were... Some of the other lads were on. I understand that got sunk, but that I can't verify, like, you know. But
was this Orion a civilian ship or a warship?
Pardon?
Was the Orion a civilian ship?
Oh, it was in peacetime, it would have been a lovely cruise liner. I believe it was a 25,000 tonner. So whether that makes it a big ship or not, I don't know, but it was a beautiful ship.
So what were conditions like for you in the ship?
Well, overcrowded, of course. I believe there were about 5,000 troops and what have you on the ship, like, including nurses and one thing and another. A bit crowded below deck, because some slept on the floor, some slept on the tabletop. Some of us had hammocks, which were awkward to get into. But we managed.
Anything that happened to you at Port Tewfik in transit?
No. The only thing I got in Port Tewfik was a touch of dysentery. We were all under canvas there. Another thing that surprised all of us was in Egypt, during the day, obviously it was very, very hot, and at night it was freezing. It's amazing how cold it was at night, which nobody expected that. And unfortunately, I got a touch of dysentery. We were under canvas, and of course, the nearest toilet had to be 200 yards away. Latrine, that's what we call them, aren't it? Latrine. But apart from that, okay.
And then the next troop ship to India?
Then we got on this, I can't remember that, he called Empire something, I can't remember. We landed in Bombay then, yes. And from Bay we went to that famous place, Dole Alley, which was a massive transit camp, all under canvas there.
What were your first impressions of India?
Well, as I say, we landed at Bombay, straight from Bombay to Dole Alley. Well, Dole Alley, it might as well have been in the middle of Dartmoor. There was nothing there, no towns, no nothing, only canvas, only tents. So it was just one massive transit camp. You're there waiting to get drafted to your respective units, you see.
With nothing to do?
Nothing to do, no.
And then what?
Well, eventually we were all on parade and... The RSM, or whoever it was, right, as I call your name out, you stand over there. And he's calling names out, over there. And me and Jack Hammond, we both joined up together, like. We stood side by side. And he's calling all these names out, and I just turned around with Jack. I thought, we're all right here, Jack, he's calling all bloody nomads out. My name was next. And to make matters worse, it was the last, and Jack's name was the first on the next draft, which meant to say we were going to get split up. I was going to the West Yorks, he was going into the Chindits. So we both went to the commanding officer of the transit camp, and pleaded either me to go with Jack or Jack to go with me. They wouldn't have it. They wouldn't do it. Yeah. So we split up. Unfortunately, Jack went to the Chindits and I went to the 2nd Battalion West Yorks. Well, that was the army. They could quite easy have... mind you, you don't know what would have happened, because later on Jack got smashed up, and later on I got wounded, so you never know. If I had gone with him, or him with me, we might have been killed. Later on, I got the telegraph from home, and in it it said Jack Hammond reported missing for his own killed. And then later on, months after, I found out that he had been badly wounded. This Jap had bayoneted him 5 times and left him for dead, emptied his water bottle over him and left Jack for dead. And we'd laid there overnight, and during the night our artillery shelled this Jack position, and Jack got wounded with his own shrapnel. And they found him next morning still alive. He's a very lucky man. He came home straight away. They called him Hammond, and he worked for Hammond's Brewery on Manchester Road, funnily enough. So when I eventually got demobbed, which was a lot later, of course, I went up to see Jack at the brewery, and I don't know how I got home from the brewery. Unfortunately, he's died since, as Jack, from those wounds.
What do you remember happening next? What do you remember happening next?
Well, when we, after we left the transit camp, went to a place called Bhopal in the middle of India for 6 weeks jungle training. We'd only been there a week or two, and I went down with malaria. So obviously I finished up in hospital. I came back out of hospital just as the other lads were finishing the 6 weeks jungle training. So I wanted to go with them. Say, well, I'm back now, not so bad. But they wouldn't let me go with them to join the unit, because, you know, you've only done a week's jungle training. You've been in hospital the last 4 or 5 weeks. You can stop here and do another 6 weeks jungle training, which I had to do, of course, like, no choice for the matter. And then eventually I did that, and I caught up with the lads.
But weren't you taking anything against malaria?
Not then, but later on, every day we have to take a Mepicin tablet, a little yellow tablet, what we call the yellow pearl. Because eventually, you went as if you'd got yellow jaundice. And it's a line up. I could never swallow a pill without a drink of water. So it's a line up with your pot of water, and the orderly sergeant or the officer come round and he watch you put that methacrine in your mouth, and he make sure you swallow it. Because the idea after that, it didn't really stop you getting malaria, but it suppressed it. And if you got malaria, you were on a charge. Self-inflicted wound, because they said you hadn't been taking your Mepicrin tablets. See? That's how strict they were in the infantry. But
you weren't taking those at Bhopal?
No, funny enough, we weren't taking them at Bhopal. I don't remember taking them at where this jungle training school. In fact, so far as I know, I was the only one that got it. But you see, I may have got it in the transit camp. We weren't taking them there now. Anyway,
what did the jungle training consist of?
Well, obviously.